Live
and local.
Across the city.
And South Cambridgeshire.
This is Louise Wilson.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Now I'm joined by Joshua D. Jones, who is the pastor of Thurfield Chapel, which is near Royston. He's come to talk about the past couple of years and what it's been like as a minister, and also his writing. So, welcome along.
Hello. It's really nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I want to start off with sort of introducing yourself, really, because you're not a native, as we can very well hear. So give us a kind of a potted history of yourself and how you ended up here in a small rural village, what with being a city boy, really, yeah. At heart. So tell us, so how did you sort of come over to be with us?
Well, so I grew up as a youth in Richmond, Virginia, and finished high school there. Trying to decide what I wanted to do after high school, I did 1 year of college, or what we might call it over here, university, thinking that I was going to go into history, either maybe be a history teacher or some sort of academia. And during that first year, had a pretty powerful experience, personal experience, in a prayer meeting that I attended with a group of friends. And I felt like I was supposed to put my studies on hold and do a gap year. And that gap year took me over here to the UK. And during that year, I met my wife. Now, she's actually originally a Danish national. So she's coming from Scandinavia, but she was on the same program. We met in South Wales, and we got married over here on this side of the Atlantic. And I've been here ever since. So that was 1999. We have four kids, and all four of our kids were born here in the UK. So this has been home my entire adult life, notwithstanding the American accent I've kept. I've been here a long time.
Yeah, great. Well, I mean, it's lovely to have you here. And I mean, you know, I've sort of, you know, heard you're quite into the social media, and you put stuff out quite a lot, and I've heard some of your teaching and stuff like that. You don't shy away from things, do you? You're quite, you deal with challenging subjects, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always a temptation when you're a minister to back away to unpopular ideas, which has really been an unfortunate phenomena within Christianity. You know, when Christianity started, it was really birthed in a very hostile environment, both locally within Israel. The belief that the Messiah had died and risen again certainly went contrary to mainstream Jewish belief. But then as it branched out throughout the Greco-Roman Empire, it was not always welcomed. It was seen as really an upstart ideology, and not always, but there was often a lot of hostility. So to be bold and to make some unpopular claims, that was part and parcel of being a Christian. And yet somehow over the 2,000 years, particularly here in the West and maybe in Britain and America, you kind of have had this image of this really polite, mild-mannered sort of vicar that, you know, has cups of teas with old ladies.
And cucumber
really
sandwiches,
nice.
Of course. Yeah, forget those. Yeah, with the crosstalk.
And so, you know, trying to speak out on ideas that are matters of conscience that you believe are true but are unpopular, unfortunately, it's something that many modern ministers back away from. Not all, but many. And there's always this sort of a psychological barrier you have to break through as a minister, that when you say, okay, I want to say this, but I know some people in my community that I care for will be offended, and yet I have an obligation to be faithful to God and to tell what I believe is the truth. Obviously, sometimes we ministers are wrong. We think something and later go back and think, actually, maybe I've changed my mind on this. But at least to say what you believe to be true at the time.
Yeah. And I want to get your take as well on certainly the last couple of years as a minister, mm-hmm. because for congregations, obviously it's been quite difficult for them because they've not been able to go to the place that for a lot of people has been a sanctuary and a place of, you know, peace and all the rest of it for them. But from a minister's point of view, how's that been for you? I mean, has that been difficult? Have you learned anything through it? Has anything positive come of it? You know, all of those things really wrapped up.
Well, yeah, my belief in God is that he can bring anything good out of every bad thing that happens. So absolutely can, I believe God redeemed this this whole situation and turn it for good. And yes, have I seen it work for good in people's lives who have kind of put their faith in him and sought to obey and respond in wise and gracious ways? Yeah, it can be used for the good. But overall, it's been a disaster, and not just for the church. You know, this has been very unfortunate for a lot of people. We are already in I guess this is where a pastor and, you know, a psychiatrist would have some overlapping magisterium here. You know, we are interested in the same thing, sort of human behavior, group behavior, individual behavior. And so the way people have been cut off from one another through lockdowns, the thing that has concerned me is that we kind of instituted these lockdowns to slow the spread of a virus. But it seems for many, particularly those in power, that was the only thing they were concerned about. And really counting the cost of what this would do to society, what this would do to poverty rates, what this would do to unemployment, what this would do to mental health, what this would do to marriages, to abuse, to alcoholism, all the costs were never fully discussed. There was never a discussion, okay, if we go into lockdown, yes, we might slow the spread of the virus. There were some numbers and some theoretical models put up that now, in looking backwards, need to be critiqued, but really having a discussion, you know, what will this do to people? What will this do to families? What will do this into, you know? And so being a pastor, I've seen that. I've seen the depression. I've spoke with people on the phone who are contemplating suicide, but, you know, people who live alone and who are cut off from others and haven't had that human contact. For us, for Jews and for Christians, you know, our scripture begins with God speaking at the creation of Adam that it is not good for man to be alone. Mm-hmm. So we have a strong theological imperative that a human being, in one sense, I don't want to overstate this, but in one sense, a human being is not a human being all by himself in a room, that there's something innately relational about a human being, and to cut off all relationships, those meaningful relationships, including our physical presence. There's something about, for a Christian particularly, the physical presence that, you know, a phone call is great. We're thankful for those. They do something, but it's not the same as being in the room with someone, to hug someone, to hold someone's hand. God has created us physical beings. And when you lose that physical fellowship, there is a, not just a spiritual, but a mental and psychological loss that I don't think was fully taken into account when we just said, yeah, let's go into lockdown. We'll just watch Netflix for 4 months.
Yeah.
And that was kind of glibly said. And I think we'll be paying the consequences, you know, paying the price for these lockdowns for a long time to come.
Yeah, because actually, I mean, thinking about it, you know, when we have a big homeless problem in Cambridge, and whenever I've heard, you know, people who are living on the streets talk about their experience of that, the hardest thing for them is, you know, it's all very well throwing money at somebody, mm-hmm. but it's actually the human contact that they miss the most. And that, I mean, and that's kind of outside of this situation, that's just a general, and I think it really is a clear picture. And, you know, I know from people that I've spoken to, you know, that experience of being alone, especially as you say, when they're living by themselves as well, elderly people, we already had a really awful situation with loneliness anyway, and then bringing that in and not even having that, like you say, that sort of human contact.
One of the strange things about all this, and I'm speaking just from the perspective of a minister, and part of our role is to oversee community and look after the relational and spiritual health of the individuals in that community, and also to a lesser degree how we connect with the broader society. It's that this whole lockdown, it kind of went in two directions at once in terms of loneliness. You're right in what you say. We, even previous to this, you know, we lived in a very lonely society. The most statistically, the person that's most likely to suffer mental health issues connected with loneliness is a 42-year-old male. But it goes to the whole spectrum, young and old, and increasingly loneliness is a big thing for young people. Now, I'm old enough, I'm of the age to remember that when I was in high school and college age, making friends was the easiest thing in the world. You know, you were just stuck with them all day. And yet, this Generation Z struggles more with loneliness than any other generation. But what this lockdown did, the responses, it on one hand, it separated people from each other physically. And for a lot of people, that was very negative. But for others who really bought into this whole, I don't know if I want to use the term narrative, but kind of the government line of we're all in this together. And there was almost a storytelling and overtones of it being like back in World War II and COVID's the like the Nazis and we're going to all stay home. And that was kind of like when we would turn our lights off in the evening. And there were sort of all these comparisons. And on one hand, that seemed to be very good for people's mental health because previous to lockdown, you had two social phenomenons that ministers across the country will be aware of. So many people struggle with meaninglessness. You know, they might have comforts, they might have technology, they might have money, but their life lacks a sense of meaning and purpose, something to sacrifice for, something bigger than themselves to live for, and just disconnected, that their life's really not connected with others. But what this lockdown did was, here's something for us to sacrifice for, and we're all in it together. And though, so even though physically I'm in my home all by myself, we're all in it together. We're all in lockdown. We're all making these sacrifices together. So it gives people a great sense of purpose, of meaning, a thought, even though it's maybe just theoretical and not real, but suddenly I'm connected with all these other people that are also sacrificing, even if I'm not having real fellowship and hugs and deep, meaningful conversations where I'm vulnerable. You know, it's not that deeper fellowship, but there is this sense that I'm part of a team on a mission and we're going to overcome this monstrosity of COVID and my sacrifice makes a difference sort of thing. And in the short term, that produces a real boost to people's mental health. Now, later on down the road, if the story changes, if you get put in a lockdown that you know the government says it's going to be 1 month and then ends up being 2 months or 3 months, or this is just until the elderly are vaccinated, and then it becomes the middle age, and then the children. And if the story keeps changing and the goalposts keep moving, then all of a sudden that
mental
sense of purpose,
lethargy, really.
All of a sudden you begin to question this narrative that gave you such a sense of meaning and solidarity mm-hmm. with the wider community. And I think this is where we're at. The lockdown originally gave people a big boost, a sense of solidarity and meaning, but the way it's been handled, the way the story has changed, people have thought, well, maybe you know, maybe this isn't the great answer we thought or the great cause that we thought, or, you know, maybe there's more to the story than the government first announced at the beginning.
And I guess what's interesting, really, and we'll have to take a break just briefly and then we'll come back and talk about your writing. But I think what's interesting is actually most people said that the second lockdown was harder than the first.
Yeah.
So it probably kind of, you know, keys into what you're saying. So.
Yep. I mean, I joyfully jumped into first lockdown. Our church shut down for a few weeks thinking, you know, 5 million, you know, how many are millions of people would be dead and we were saving lives. And it was, you know, it was kind of through March, April, and then maybe not till May that myself and maybe some other church leaders began to look around and think, no, wait a minute, let's rethink this a little bit. In what sense are we really part of greater society, and are we all in it together? And in what sense is this distracting us from our sense of faithfulness to Jesus, who called us to follow him and obey him first and foremost? So there's certainly been a lot of rethinking of these issues on my part, at least last year, as last year went along.
Okay, right, let's just take a short break and we'll come back and talk about your writing.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Friday evenings on Cambridge 105 Radio, Johnny Five is on the decks with guest DJs from across the region. They're mixing drum and bass, garage, house and dubstep. The Urban Bassline Show, tonight at 7 on Cambridge 105 Radio.
CKLG Accountants are a friendly team of accountants and tax advisors with big firm expertise.
I'm Lawrence, Director of CKLG, responsible for business services. We understand that running a successful business brings many challenges. Our experienced business services team provide a bespoke service and offer professional advice at every stage of your business journey, allowing you the freedom to focus more on what you do best.
To find out more, call us on Cambridge 810 100 to arrange an initial chat with one of our specialists, or visit our website cklg.co.uk.
CKLG Accountants, your partner in business, your partner in life.
you like to work for a company that cares? Caremark Cambridge and South Cambridgeshire, a local family-run home care business, are looking for compassionate, caring people who'd enjoy delivering an exceptional care service within their clients' homes. Full training is given and you'd receive a competitive hourly rate of pay and benefits. This is a hugely rewarding role, looking after vulnerable people who require the help and support, which allows them to remain living in their own homes. If you'd like to know more about joining the Caremark team as a care and support worker, call 01223 77818 or email cambridge@caremark.co.uk.
So I'm still joined by Joshua D. Jones, who is the pastor of Thurfield Chapel. And before that, we were talking about the lockdown, the situation there. But now we're going to talk about some of the writing that you do, and actually, kind of, as we were talking whilst that music was on, and beforehand, you know, I get the impression that we're sort of living in a generation now. You know, when I was at school, we had assemblies where we used to sing hymns and things like that. And we were familiar, if you like, with some of the teachings of the Bible. But now we're not so much. I think we're living in a generation who are very, very detached from that. And those things don't really happen anymore. And some of your books, you were saying, are to kind of cover that basis. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, so in addition to being a pastor, I am an author, both nonfiction as well as fiction. But the things I think you brought me in to speak on was probably my latest book, which was a trilogy. And it's of a genre called biblical fiction. Now, of course, if there's any agnostics or atheists listening, they might kind of quip, well, isn't the whole Bible fiction, you know? But when a Christian talks about biblical fiction, it may be something similar to the popular TV series right now, like The Chosen, where you take a biblical character that makes an appearance in Scripture, maybe for a few pages, and then there's sort of a fantasy fiction element where you come in, you kind of, in a historically informed way, give a lot of backstory to how, you know, you might in the Gospels, for example, see a conversation between Jesus and a prostitute. Well, if you're going to make a TV show out of that, you might give some background, what this woman's daily life might be like, and, you know, kind of a, let's say, nonfiction with liberties, or a very historically informed fiction, whatever you want to call it.
So in the same way that an actor perhaps has a role,
yeah,
they then make up a backstory.
So even if you believe, you know, as I do, as a Christian or as an Orthodox Jew would, that the stories, particularly in the Hebrew scriptures, are, you know, that there, some of these things happen in real space, in real time, usually we're given the abridged, shortened versions. And if you're going to make a movie or a book out of it, you have to, you know, use some historical resources, some cultural resources to try to flesh out the story a little more. And that's what I've done in these books, the Oliver Anderson trilogy, where we take three of some of the darkest, grittiest books in the Hebrew scriptures, Judah and Tamar, Mordecai and Esther, and Samson and Delilah. And we sort of retell these stories for a generation that was raised on things like Game of Thrones and The Witcher. Because very often it's thought that the stories of the Bible were these nice, cute little stories about lambs walking around. And, you know, you really get into it, particularly some of the Old Testament stories. Man, they're dark, and there's violence, rape, incense, you know, sexual sin, of all sorts of, you know, you think, wow, I didn't realize this stuff was in the Bible. And so it's represented in a way to a generation familiar with dystopia novels and dark fantasy.
So what sort of age are we talking?
So I wouldn't give it to anyone under 13.
Okay.
So, you know, it doesn't shock. All of these stories have violent elements and sexual elements into it that are darker and more aggressive than you'd normally be discussing in polite society. But they're all biblically faithful. These things are really recorded in the Bible. So you could do it for young adults or adults who like the fiction fantasy. So if you were an adult and you followed Game of Thrones, or you follow The Witcher, or you follow some of these other things, then, you know, it is that genre. And not because I'm trying to force it to be that genre, but it very naturally, these stories in the Bible lend themselves to that genre of telling.
Right. So, well, that sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
And what whereabouts would you find your books, you know, if people were interested?
Yeah, so they can be found in hardback, in paperback, or in Kindle, all on Amazon. Now, they're a trilogy, but each book can be read as a standalone. And for people, particularly if you're not a person of faith, if you're not a Christian or an Orthodox Jew, and, you know, you might be interested to say what would kind of a book, you know, a fiction fantasy from the Christian scriptures kind of look like. I'd really recommend starting with the second one, actually. It is called The Genesis Ghosts, and The Genesis Ghosts follows the story of Judah and Tamar. So this Judah would be the sort of the patriarch of the Jewish nation. That's where we get the word Jew from, Judah. So he was the character, and Tamar was his daughter-in-law, but she seduced him in a way. Well, I'm not going to give away how that happened, but it's a very sordid relationship, but yet somehow God used that for good. And so, you know, the reason I think these stories will appeal to many people is because that's the sort of characters people are looking for in a lot of these other novels and TV shows, where you have not the perfect character, but a very imperfect hero, you know. And you got that in some of the big series. I've already mentioned Game of Thrones and The Witcher, but, you know, this...
Would you compare them slightly to sort of C.S. Lewis and the sort of The Lion, The Witch, and the Wardrobe, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, as long as the hero is Edmund, you know, there's... certainly there's also an age appropriateness difference. Yeah. I would read kids Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I wouldn't necessarily read them these until they're older. So, yeah, there is this appeal to the imperfect hero who's not all the white knight in shining armor. Mm. He has his own internal battles to go through, and he can be cruel and a bit of a jerk sometimes too. And yet throughout the story, there's some internal progress to what is good, true, noble, and right. So that's the Oliver Anderson trilogy. The Girl in the Guardian is the first book. That is Mordecai and Esther, which is the foundation for the Jewish holiday of Purim. Then, as I mentioned, The Genesis Ghosts is the second one. I often recommend that to people outside the church as a good starting point. And then last one, Samson and Delilah, maybe the most well-known culturally story. A lot of people have heard of Samson, the strong man, and that's called Samson and the Siren.
Great. So just as we wrap up as well, I just want to kind of get your thoughts, because we're going to have to head up to the news in just a moment. But just your thoughts, really, on sort of going back to America. So we're going to be losing you soon, aren't we?
So yeah, the plan is that next year our family will return to America. That's after I've been away since 1999. So what is that, 21, 22 years, something like this. So it's been a long time. My whole adult life has been over here. So it's... it's weird. G.K. Chesterton, you know, tells a story about a British explorer who sets out to discover the Pacific Islands, and a storm comes and his boat is redirected, and he lands on this place that he names New South Wales. But in reality, it's Old South Wales. And he goes about exploring his home as an explorer for the first time. And he talks about this thrill of something being both very familiar but totally new and exciting. Now, his comparison is to Christianity, how he was raised in a quote-unquote Christian country back at the beginning of the, you know, the 1900s. But then as an adult converted and said, wow, Christianity, the gospel, it's been under my nose the whole time, and here it is, you know. And it's discovering something so familiar. And I feel like going back to America, the country I was raised in, but for the first time as an adult and rediscovering it, it's going to be like that. You know, sometimes we can romanticize our home country if we've been away from for a real long time. And so I'm well aware that I might have a tendency to think of it through rose-tinted glasses and remember all the good moments I had as a child there in America, and I might get back and think, oh, actually, this is a mess. You know? So I'm looking forward to some good things, but I'll also anticipate some challenges as me and my family adapt from British culture to American culture, because they are very different in many ways.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, and wonderful to hear, well, so much, a vast array of subjects, really, and thoughts. And so do get online and check out these books that we've been discussing. And that's Joshua D. Jones from Fairfield Chapel. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Okay, taking us up to the news, this is Noah and the Whale.
Cambridge 105 Radio.